The court of the state of Illinois has now convened. The Honorable Peter C. Kavanaugh presiding.
Good morning. We'll first call 4-22-1060, In Re Marriage of Fannie S. Lewin and Perry H. Lewin. Counsel for the appellant, please state your name for the record.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. Jeffrey Riva, R-Y-V-A, for Fannie Lewin, appellant.
Thank you. And counsel for the appellee.
Judy Saratella for the appellee, Pierre Lewin.
Thank you. Mr. Rea, you may proceed.
Yes, it pleases the court, Ms. Saratella. I'm pleased to be here to represent Fannie here today in connection with this appeal. I think where I want to start is I think where they tell us all to start, which is what's the standard of review, because I think there's a dispute on that, Your Honors. And our view is that despite the fact that there was, you know, something that, you know, looked like a trial with witnesses called, that really the issue is one of law. It depends on the interpretation of the marital settlement agreement. The evidence was really only about the party's conduct or some of the rules of construction in connection with interpreting agreements. Really, that boiled down to some documentary exhibits, the transcripts from the previous judges, rulings and orders, pleadings and orders, et cetera. This was really not a credibility determination on the issue of the meaning of the actual agreement. So we think that while, and we're not really even contesting anything other than the interpretation of the agreement as a matter of law, we realize, and I think we made abundantly clear in our brief and in front of the trial judge, that we were objecting to, you know, the construction that Pierre had put on the agreement, that the court ultimately did as well, but that, you know, if she ruled against us, well, then we didn't have any other arguments, you know, about compliance or non-compliance. What Fannie did was basically act in accordance with what her belief was as to the meaning of the agreement after Judge Asbury.
Mr. Reba, you haven't said anything yet. You just bounced around. Let's get to the crux of the matter. What is your strongest position that your client's interpretation of the marital settlement agreement ought to prevail?
Okay, my position in short order is basically that, again, it's a question of law, and that when Judge Wilson got the case, Judge Asbury had previously clarified the marital settlement agreement. The marital settlement agreement has been subject to years of litigation. I mean, the pure fact that Judge Asbury's order said that he was clarifying the marital settlement agreement tells me, and hopefully it tells the court, that this document, these paragraphs needed clarification. Our point is that Judge Wilson just flat out missed the point that Judge Asbury had actually, in his rulings and in his order for that matter, had concluded that, unlike what we had, what everybody had thought at the beginning back in 2016, that these accounts were the kids' accounts, that they never were the kids' accounts. And by the time he clarified that, that showed that actually these were the parents' own accounts. And basically at that point, what we think happened was that the circuit judge construed this more as like a custodial account issue where the money goes to the kids. But the 529 laws, which we cited in our brief, say no, it's not so limited, that the actual owner of the account can use it for other educational expenses, not just for that particular child. So that in a nub is what we say the issue is. Now, the other thing I want to make sure I mention here is that we argued that there was a, in addition to just the construction argument, that even if the court had found this clear, that there was a mistake. And we all know that a mutual mistake can vitiate an agreement. And we said basically in, you know, sum and substance, that when the parties were talking about these accounts remaining the accounts of the children, they couldn't have ever remained the accounts because they never were the accounts of the children. These were the accounts of the parents. Now, there's also parts of the record that show Pierre basically emailing Fanny and making statements as if he had gifted the money into her 529s back way before the marital settlement agreement was even enacted or even executed. So our point there is that when he did that, the law is part of every agreement. We all know that. The law is part of every agreement. And what happened here was, and I think this is, and I know we argued this below, that this actually, if it wasn't, and again, going back real quickly, we had tried to get this order modified and Judge Asbury said, no, you can't modify it. It's not a college order, expense order. It's a property distribution. Well, if it's a property distribution and Pierre gifted the money, that would have been non-marital property. So Fanny would have owned those accounts as her non-marital property at the time. That was a huge mistake on the part of all of the parties. Now, from Pierre's standpoint, I think he's just as equally mistaken because throughout, as I show in my brief, first he thinks the trust funds are the same thing as the 529s. Then he thinks he owns them. Then he thinks that the kids own them. Then he thinks they're regular trust accounts. Then in his last brief, he says that Fanny is the manager of the accounts. None of these have any bearing. And it seems to me the plain fact that the judge never ruled on the mistake theory, I mean, all she did was just look and say, I think it's unambiguous. I don't think that what Judge Asbury said in his orders or rulings changed that, but he said he was clarifying and providing a process for how all of this could work. If he was just clarifying by providing a process, he would have said, I'm clarifying by providing a process. So he was clarifying that these accounts were really owned by the parents and that this was a property distribution. And Judge Wilson.
May I interrupt you for a moment?
Sure, you might. Certainly, Your Honor.
Say that the prior trial court, prior to Judge Wilson, and I'm sorry, who was the trial judge?
Judge Asbury.
But that Judge Asbury clarified, but there was never a written order or a ruling or finding supporting your client's thought here that the 529s were the parents' property. Is that right?
Well, my position on that is if you take a look...
In that regard, is that correct?
Is there specific verbiage? I would agree with you, but can I just make a quick comment? Because what had happened...
Quickly, because your time's running short.
I know. Our point there is, yes, I will agree with you. It doesn't specifically say what I think your question is saying, did we actually have that in the order? But if you have to look at the context, before all of that had happened, Judge Asbury, other judges, everybody was referring to this as the children's account. That's what the clarification was. And even if you look at his ruling, he says that. But then it's also important to note that he starts talking in that order after that hearing of, let's see, what was it? After the May 13th hearing, he actually starts talking then in his ruling where he's talking, these are the parents' accounts. He does that in paragraph 3 of that order and twice in paragraph 5. That's what we're saying is maybe not in so many words, but that by concluding at that point that those were the parents' accounts, that shows that everything that came before that was a mistake on the part of both parties. That's what our position is.
Ultimately, your client engaged in a course of conduct that was found to be contrary to the court's prior order and basically did so at her own risk because she knew that it had not been clarified by way of a finding or court ruling, but it was an assumption based on the way Judge Asbury was referring to things in comments. Is that correct?
Yes, she did access the money, put it into a secure account. It's not like it was ever at risk at all. And she said in her testimony that she was always going to abide by the ruling. I think what her fear was, you know, we know when we're talking about interpreting agreements, the party's conduct, you know, is certainly relevant. And we thought that if she didn't take some step to, you know, basically take action on her belief, that the other side would be saying that, well, even she doesn't believe it, doesn't believe her own words. So that's why she did what she did. And she only went to the point of putting it to a secure location. It's not like she went and put all the money in a house or blew it at the gambling tables or something.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. That really is a summary here of what I wanted the court to be aware of. I guess, you know, back to, if I have a few more minutes, you know, when it comes down to it, if this is an interpretation of the agreement issue, you have to look at the law, and the law that Judge Asbury, I think he did clarify this enough through his ruling on the record, and also, even though not in so many words, by referring to the accounts as the parents, they were not college accounts, that brings in this issue about the law of gift, and that this would be Fannie's non-marital property. I'm not going to bother the court. We've set forth all our arguments about all the various rules of construction, about you have to use all the words and construe.
Mr. Riva, then I do have a specific question to ask. Yes, you, in regards to the contempt finding. Your client is appealing the contempt order. Is that right?
Yes, we are. What we're saying again, we think that we're right on the merits, but only you three can tell us whether we're right or wrong. And as I know from my appellate seminars, you probably already have seen something, and hopefully it's favorable to me. But my alternate argument there, Judge, is that this is something that, I mean, I know Fannie did access the money, but it was to a secure location. She didn't take any steps that I think were contemptuous. She knew that she was going to be appealing this. And I don't think this is something that warranted a contempt finding. If we lose, we lose. But this is really the first time, especially after Judge Asbury, at a minimum, I think everybody would have to agree that by the time Judge Asbury got done with this, he had certainly done something to make this different than what it had been to begin with. And she just had every legal right to have the court to interpret it. And she was interpreted against her, but it was not an affront to the court's power and dignity to seek a ruling that had never previously been made.
Mr. Riva, the order at issue is the one entered November 7, 2022. Is that correct?
Right. And then there's the fee awards. That's the main order. Then I think the court may know that. I think there was an order
specifically as to the contempt finding.
Right. That's the contempt finding.
Okay. So in the contempt order, what was the sanction that was entered? Specifically, what did Judge Wilson identify as the sanction for contempt?
Well, certainly the attorney's fees would have been one.
Where does it say that there is a sanction entered?
It says it right it doesn't say in that order. It says that Ms. Saratella can file a request for fees. And then that's what I meant. The subsequent orders set the amount of the fees as the sanction. It would have
any contempt order, any valid contempt order, imposes sanctions and then identifies a specific course of action that the contemnor can take to purge him or herself of contempt. Is that in this order? Are either of those two things in this order?
Well, I think what we understood the order to mean that Fannie had been held in contempt, Ms. Saratella could file a fee petition, and then the amount of fees was to be paid. Now, we went ahead and paid the fees only because we figured they'd be claiming we were in contempt again. But I think, I know what we've talked about, if we win, then we would get that money back. But the other sanction that I see here is just the sanction of, I mean, since this was a contempt case, the other sanction, of course, is the actual ordering of the transfer of the money. Now, if the judge is right, let's just assume she was right on the construction, that would mean that Fannie, you know, would have to transfer Victorine's part. She's the one that's out of college. She's done. Lucas is still in college. The only thing that we talked about in the trial was one missed payment by Fanny, and that was brought to her attention in a hearing. We immediately, it had to do with, we sent it to someplace, and I think Lucas and Victorine and Pierre were in Europe on vacation. So, you know, again, it wasn't like a string of missed payments. Our point there is that I guess the sanction would have included transferring Lucas's entire five, you know, or Fanny's 529 to Lucas for the, you know, for what she was holding in that balance. I don't know where the authority would have been to do that otherwise, because even Judge Asbury previously had said he didn't think he had any power to order any transfers of 529 money.
Mr. Riva, I'll just ask one final question. I don't want to monopolize my colleagues' time here, but is it accurate that you have not raised as an issue in this appeal that the trial court's contempt order is invalid because it did not contain a sanction or purge provision?
No, because I would agree that we did not raise that, because if the only order had been what you're pointing out, I would have made that argument. But because you have to look at it in the context of the actual fee award that came after it, I think that I don't think this is one that is the type of contempt that it was really curable. It's more of, you were in contempt, violated the order, you got to pay his attorney's fees. This is not something that I don't think Fanny was, you know, directed to do something. Now, I don't see this as a keys to the jail cell type of contempt, if you get my drift. It's just, you lose and you pay attorney's fees and that's it. So that's what all I have to say about that.
Anything else, counsel?
No, I'd be happy to answer any other questions, but I'll defer. Thank you.
I have questions. I need to set it up. Early in your argument, Justice Harris asked you about the potential of assumptions being made. And the facts, as I understand them, is that, and I recall them, is that the statement from the court that was used is that these accounts, these 529s, are the parents' accounts. And so there's sort of a conclusion. What's your answer with regard to the assumption your client allegedly made that these are, there was some type of ruling or finding that these were no longer traditional 529 use accounts?
Well, I guess I would say that they actually were traditional 529s, but in sum and substance, as I alluded to earlier, we thought that she needed to access that money to get it into a safe location, just to show that she had thought that this ruling by Judge Asbury really was binding. That's about all I can.
Well, maybe this is an aside and not a question, but it seems in a family law matter that parties often go back to court looking for clarifications, motion to reconsider. That doesn't seem to be in the record. But let me ask, because the reason I ask these questions is that you later say in one of your responses that, in fact, it's not a college account, and that Judge Asbury surely had done something with these accounts. What I'm looking for is something the court did other than state that these are the parents' account. I don't recall, and it's been some time, but I don't recall the language that these are not college accounts. Is that language going to be found in the record if I go back and
prove the record once again? Yes, that's going to be, you're talking about transcripts.
Yes.
2262 of the common law record, C2262 and 2324 to 26. Those were exhibits in our hearing. So that's why they're in the common law record. There was probably in both, but those are the notes I have.
And so I will find the verbiage that they're no longer college accounts, because that sounds more of a like a finding the court made. And I just don't recall having seen that first time around, but it's been some time. My recollection is that the language the court used is that they are not, the funds are the parents' accounts. There's a difference.
Right. Well, I think that's still what our whole point is, that, I mean, at the end of the day, Pierre fought tooth and nail to avoid the paragraphs 12 and 13 being college expense orders that could have been otherwise modified due to you know, at least allegations that he had sold his business and made a big pile of money. So he fought tooth and nail, but now once it seems that it's come back to now, this is all a property distribution, that's where the mistake lies. That's where the argument about the gift from Pierre to Fanny has arisen. And all these things didn't come up until just in the series of hearings here with Judge Asbury, none of which rulings were appealed. So here we are.
Very well. Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you so much, Your Honors.
All right. Counsel, Saratella, am I saying that correctly? I'm sure I'm not.
No, you are. It's Saratella. Okay.
Very well. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Basically, I believe Judge Wilson got this correct in her November 7th, 2022 order. These two got divorced in August of 2016. They reached a property agreement. And then here we are years later, the wife is unhappy with the agreement. Whether she went through her money, I don't know, I don't care. But she then started on a course of conduct to steal her kids' college funds, and she ultimately did it. And so Pierre had to spend thousands of dollars in attorney's fees to get that undone. So basically, in a nutshell, I think this just boils down to as simple as that. The interest of judicial economy, I'll leave it if you have any questions for me, but I would stand on my brief and Judge Wilson's order. Thank you.
Any questions? Any rebuttal to any of the statements of counsel?
If there weren't many, so it won't be very long. That's maybe a great closing argument on the effect, but I think you still, the linchpin of the whole appeal is the interpretation, whether Judge Wilson misinterpreted that we think there was enough of what Judge Asbury had said that it needed to be clarified. He did clarify it, and that there's a mistake. As soon as we get to the point where we start talking about the parents owning the accounts and it's been declared by Judge Asbury, that means that there had to be a mistake. The paragraphs 12 talk about the property remaining the children's. Something can't remain the children's and if it never was the children. And it was retroactive. They didn't just become the parents' 529s when Judge Asbury ruled. He showed that they had been that way since 2007 when they were started. So that's, I think, about all I can say about that.
Let me ask a question. The marital settlement agreement, who prepared it?
Well, that actually was Ms. Saratella's co-counsel, Dave McCarthy.
Well, were you of counsel at that point?
I was, yes, Your Honor.
Well, what did you all think that meant?
Well, we
those paragraphs of the marital settlement agreement, which say, not in so many words, but in very specific words.
Well, I think what we thought, I'm sorry.
The money's for educational expenses. If you don't spend it, it gets divided among the other kids.
Well, we think that what the issue that arose was, that's why it's so important that we framed the case in terms of mistake, but never got a ruling on mistake. Our mistake argument is that, let's assume that we and Fanny, everybody realized, we all read the document. Okay, they used the word the children's accounts. I don't think anybody at that point realized that these weren't the children's accounts. And if we had not been mistaken both sides at that point, there would have been a whole different ball game in reaching a settlement, because then we would have had this couple of $100,000 per kid sitting out kind of in no man's land, and we would have pushed that would have been of Fanny's non-marital property. So
thank you.
Okay, hope that helps. I don't have anything else, Your Honors, but happy to answer any further questions.
Okay, hearing none, the court will take this matter under advisement.